Welcome to episode 2 of the School Free Life podcast. Today I'm chatting with Lucy Aitken-Reed, whose work in the realms of unschooling and beyond has been incredibly inspiring, not only to me, but so many others on the path of unschooling.
Thanks for joining. Yeah,
such a pleasure to be here. I actually had a really funny time at the weekend because I was like, oh man, I should definitely connect with some more people because I'm quite a hibernator. Like I stay pretty close to myself. And then every now and then I'm like, oh, I actually really do love chatting with people. I should, you know, go through my Instagram and like see who I would love to connect with. And I immediately thought of two people and you were one of them.
Right.
And then when I looked at my calendar, I was like, oh yeah, that's actually booked in on Monday.
Awesome. I love that. Perfect alignment.
Funny, eh?
Yeah. When I put a call out for this podcast as to who my friends and my community wanted me to talk to, you were the number one person who came up. And I had already thought, oh, I would really love to connect with Lucy because myself and so many other people in my community are inspired by your work and what you put out into the world and share with the world. It's really beautiful and wholesome and liberating, you know. It's you really go there, and I think, yeah, it's just so important to share what's possible. You do it so beautifully.
Thank you. Thanks for your encouraging words.
So would you like to introduce yourself and speak a little bit about who you are, where you're from, how you came to unschooling?
I can do that. Sure. So I'm Lucy and I share my life with my partner Tim and our children, Ramona, who is 13, and Juno, who is 10, and they have never been to school. When they were very, very tiny, I had an experience in the Black Forest in Germany where I got to be a part of a Waldkindergarten, which is a sort of democratic learning space for very small kids. And while I was there, I was also reading John Holt's book, How Children Fail. Let me just look it up. It's like the original one is How Children Learn, and then but the one I read was sort of like the aftermath of that. Hang on, How Children, I think it is that, but that just sounds really wrong.
I know the one you're talking about as well.
No, it is. It's literally called How Children Fail, but okay. It just sounds wrong. But that was the book that I read. And it was like I was reading the theory, but then seeing it in practice. And those two things just created a massive alchemy inside of me. And I went from being somebody who was like, middle class people need to invest in the schooling system for the sake of the collective, da da da, to being like, there is no way my kids are going to school. And basically becoming an unschooler within a week. Wow. I had a complete transformation. And so by the time we were at that time in transition from London to New Zealand, where my partner is from, and by the time we ended up in New Zealand, we were just full-blown unschoolers with like a one-year-old and a three-year-old. But we were already claiming that as the paradigm that we were going to live in, and we've just never looked back, basically.
Amazing. And so were your children born in London? And is your partner from New Zealand or is he from the UK as well?
Yeah, he's from New Zealand, but we met here in New Zealand while I was studying. I moved over here for a period when I was between 18 and 23, and we met and got married so young. And then we moved back to London and lived there for a while and had kids, but we were spending so long getting ourselves to wild spaces from London. So every weekend after work, every holiday, we were like getting the bus and a train with our bikes and our two kids to wild spaces. And we were just like, this is ridiculous. Let's go to a place where it's actually really easy to raise your kids in the wild. And so, yeah, then we moved to New Zealand and ended up actually buying land with another family and raising our kids off grid in yurts.
Right.
For 8 years and had that big adventure. But then a couple of years ago, we've moved to a small seaside town where we just mostly surf.
Oh, good.
And yeah, my work is around supporting unschooling families mostly. I have a course called Disco that is designed as an initiation, basically. The alchemy that happened for me in the Black Forest, I want to create for people, give them that experience of kind of practical and theoretical, combustion that can get your feet set on a path that is not very well supported ordinarily in society. But with the right support, you know, it can be so amazing and liberating. So that's a big chunk of my work these days.
Incredible. Yeah, it is. It is such a explosive moment, isn't it? For most people, when I speak to people about how they started their unschooling or homeschooling journey, or I work a lot in the free birth space, and it's very similar. There's so many crossovers. It's such an explosive moment where once you see, you can't unsee.
Yeah, there's like a biblical story of Paul on the Damascus Road, and I think it's like described as like the scales falling off your eyes.
Wow.
And I think it is like that for a lot of people with these more radical lifestyle changes. It is as if like a few things come into place at just the right time in your life, and it is as if like scales fall from your eyes and you just start looking around the world with a whole new gaze and you actually can't go back to seeing things the old way anymore.
Absolutely. And it can be really confronting, I think, for a lot of people. I know it was for me and my partner as well. My partner was a school teacher for 15 years, and his unraveling is insane. It's been pretty amazing to witness. So for you, when you had that explosive moment in the forest, did you find for you and your partner that you were confronted by your own schooling or your own conditioning or anything that has, you know, kind of led you down, you know, that path that you were on previously of investing in the public school system?
Honestly, for me, it was such a potent alchemical process that it was as if my entire brain wiring just melted and rewired up. And it was that powerful for me. And I really quickly dropped into a huge rabbit hole of reprogramming my mind. So for like quite a few years, I was completely immersed in research around what we were doing. And, you know, that's just how I work. And I basically didn't stick my head out from the parapet for like years. So for me, it was, I didn't. It was like one of my greatest gifts, I think, that I offer like the unschooling movement in a way, is that I have never, ever had a doubt ever. Like, I am just so, I just have so much fortitude that this is the absolute best thing we could do.
I love that. That's so
I know.
Powerful. It's so good to hear that. It's because it's not the case for a lot of people. It's they kind of dance between the two worlds for a while and they're unsure. And it comes back to community, I suppose, as well. It depends who you're surrounded by and people's projections and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But also like the individual, like what you're actually, you know, how much you believe in what's true for you and your family.
Yeah, I've thought about it loads, actually. Like, I've analyzed it a lot, because in a way I'd like to be able to like be a little bit more empathetic, but I just I'm like, no, this is just absolutely the right thing to do.
Right.
And I think it's because, one, I do just have like a bit of a sort of rebellious element to me, which is just doesn't super care about people's opinions whom I should ordinarily care about, like family members and extended family. Like, I just honestly don't care what they think about what I'm doing. I really don't care about it. I've just been able to allow any criticism to just like drip off my back. So that hasn't been a factor. Also, my whole family has always done everything really quite differently. So I think I have like a bit of a heritage of like being a bit of a rebel. It's in like my blood, to be honest. And then the third thing is that I fucking hated school. School massively wounded me. It totally fucked me up. And so as soon as I was given a tiny little opportunity to turn my back on mass education and actually call it out for the bullshit that it was and the very harmful, toxic environment that it was. As soon as I was given like a tiny little thread of that, I just grabbed it and I was like, yeah. I was like, fuck it, school. You know, like, because I really, it really didn't do me well at all. I was not, it was not the right place for me. I am neurodivergent. Super creative, that natural like rebellion that I have, none of that did well in a school environment. And I spent almost every minute of every day at school totally bored or alone in isolation being punished because I couldn't do what they required me to do.
Right.
So honestly, I think that's probably the main thing is that I actually had a really bad time at school. And I think if you've had a good time at school, if you've received a lot of praise, well, that gives you a whole other burden of different types of school wounds, but it also makes it much harder to de-school because you have in your body some like good memories of feeling good at school. Whereas
it's almost
I literally
you've got
don't have a
rose-colored glasses on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't have a single good memory of school.
Yeah.
And at the same, really similar to you, my partner Tim is a school teacher by trade.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been, you know, the pair of us have journeyed obviously together on this. So, you know, in a way we've been de-schooling hard because we're like a unit raising our kids. And it's been absolutely amazing to watch his unfolding into this whole thing. And now he is a huge fan. So for me, it was like night and day. Whereas for Tim, he's been like super tentative and like, oh, I think this is a good thing. Oh, we'll back up the truck. And actually now he with our 10 and 13-year-old, he is just like so into what we've done. And it feels right now that we have all of the fruits of having poured into this garden for the last, 10 years.
Oh, that's so beautiful to hear. I actually resonate with what you just described about you and Tim's journey because, yeah, my partner, I'm so similar. For me, it was like night and day, no going back. Like, absolutely, this is the path. And, you know, I sometimes it's like, he's so loose. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just trust. I fully trust. And he's, yeah, the tentative journey is, we're still unraveling from that, I think. And it's really beautiful to speak with people like yourself and other people in the community who have older children who are entering the teen years and are really still dedicated to the path. And that's something that I really wanted to chat to you about because in my community, and I'm sure a lot of people listening experience this as well with older children who are entering adolescence, a common question that people have from outsiders is, what are you going to do for high school? What are you going to do when your kids are teens? And I would love to, if you feel open to sharing a little bit about that journey, because it is so different to having younger children. They're ready to leave our auric field and go out on their own. And I don't know what it's like in your community, but here where I am, there seems to be a little bit of a gap in that space as to finding people who are unschooling with teens or on that journey. So would you like to share a little bit about what that's been
Yeah,
like for you, Tim?
Totally. It's that is really real is like a big shift once the kids get older for people jumping into high school. And actually that has totally happened over the last 3 months. So since the start of the year, pretty much every single teenager in our community has moved into the local school from homeschooling. So it's been a really big change here, and so we're definitely still navigating it. Most of Ramona's friends, like closest friends, live away from here. So Ramona's our 13-year-old, and so for us, de-schooling community has looked like kind of loosening up on what we have as our vision of community. And in an ideal world, we would have like 10 teenagers and they would meet for 3 days a week. And we had that until the end of last year. We literally had that. And now we don't have that. And so we're just having to roll with the new thing. And what it looks like at the moment is Ramona actually going away to friends' houses who live around New Zealand for, 10 days, 2 weeks. She'll like get the bus out there and hang with their family, and then they might get the bus back together and hang at our house. So we have like an extra teenager here, and then they do their missions from here. So it's really, really sweet, and it works really well with Ramona's sort of independence, her adventurous spirit to go on these big missions and go away. It's definitely, in a way, not ideal because, I would love to still have like 10 cool teenagers that they can go and hang out in a yurt for 3 days. That would be amazing. But we're just letting it go and just letting this new version emerge and, enjoy it and celebrate it and be grateful for how it looks now. And we also know that that could change. All it might take is one single person showing up in our local community who's Ramona's age, and suddenly everything feels like perfect again. So it's very, you use the words ebb and flow, and I find with community, there's so much ebb and flow, and you just have to really kind of be quite buoyant with how you experience it. And the worst thing you can do is to just be so sad and gutted that it's not like your ideal.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, unless that lasts for a really long time and it's like really real, because then you should do something about it. And we did, like that, we did actually move to a town where there were was more local, a bit more of a local scene. So it's like also using your intuition, your deep wisdom to know if this is an ebb and flow situation and a de-schooling what you think community should look like situation, or if actually you're being invited to, make some moves to put you more into alignment with your vision. That's just intuition, don't you find?
I agree. I totally agree. It is such an ebb and flow, and that whole schooled mindset of kids needing this consistent thing in their life all the time in order to be experiencing a healthy social life, which is like the main thing, I guess, that comes up. How do your kids socialize? They need to go to school to socialize. It's not necessarily it doesn't necessarily reflect a healthy social life at all. I feel like leaning into this ebb and flow of life with our children actually prepares them for living a healthy adulthood. And yeah, it's not the norm, so it feels radical to a lot of people, but it's actually quite easy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is a little bit, in adulthood, we aren't like, oh, you need to have three best friends that you hang out with every day. Otherwise, you've got a terrible social life. Actually, if I look through my adulthood, it's super ebb and flowy as well. Like some years I've got like the tightest crew of women around me. It's been so fun and amazing. Other years, I felt pretty solo. I've just been in mama mode and just hibernation mode or creative mode or work mode or something. Other times, it's more like I've got a big network of people. Other times, I've got like one bestie that I go away with. It's really dynamic. And we don't really set massive standards for friendship and social life for people.
It's so funny that it's just not even a thing once you leave school. Like, people don't even think about it. My son, who my oldest, who is 8, we were talking about this yesterday, and he said to me, we went out to a waterfall, and we were just hanging out in the bush, and it was just me and my kids, and we had the best time. And my son Sylvester said, "This is great. I don't need to be in a classroom with 30 people. That would be so hard." And it's so beautiful that, as he's blossoming into this young man, these realizations are really truly dropping in now, just about how absurd that is, because he feels so connected, not just to his siblings and me, but like nature and whatever it is that is around him in that moment. And yeah, I love
Exactly. And I think that's like such a beautiful thing to remember as well, is like we are like born with a need to belong and to connect, but we can really get like blow out what we think of when we think of as belonging and connecting. And like times where I have not had like those people around me, when we lived in a yurt, it was on one hand kind of social. And on the other hand, all of my really good friends lived an hour away. And honestly, I couldn't be bothered to organize to go see them, like between being a mum and keeping our farm going, I would often go weeks without really having a friend hang. And on one hand, I look back on that because we have such a social life now. I look back on it and I'm like, man, those were maybe like really lonely times. But do you know what was really happening at that time? Is that I was establishing my connection with the earth in a way that I never thought was possible. And for me, our time in the yurts was this immense rewilding of my spirit. And I really began to see like the trees and the animals around us and the very earth itself as family, and began to really relate to them that way. So yeah, I think blowing out what we think of when we think of who we're connecting with, is really enormous. And that can help us look at our kids and see what they're doing, what they're filling the gaps with. Because I do think that we are born with a need to connect and belong, but that we might not necessarily be talking about humans.
Totally. I see my children connecting with the dirt and belonging with the dirt. And especially my littlest one, my two littlest ones, they would spend all day just digging a hole, and it's,
And themselves, so it's like, what if the gaps could be filled, by the dirt, the earth, all of the living beings around us, their creativity, themselves, their soul's purpose. I feel like we're never in deficit with that. We're just filling it with things that we maybe don't honor.
Yeah, and that's just another cultural norm, isn't it? Filling the space, ramming our child's life with a schedule and all of these extracurricular activities in order to be a successful person in this world, when it's really what, in my opinion, lures them away from that innate connection to their creative life force, which comes from being with themselves or being with the earth or being in their process. And that requires them to be bored. Like, boredom is beautiful, and it's really sad to know that so many children out there in the world just are constantly being diverted from just being with themselves, no matter where they live. And I find with as I go on my own deschooling journey and lean more into unschooling, it's just this experience of just being has just becomes our day to day. And it's my children's normal. It's your children's normal. And they're not unraveling from anything like we are. They don't have this traumatic experience of childhood or being schooled in childhood to unravel from. They're safe just being. And I think that that is, it's so simple and feels so normal, but it's actually so radical when you step outside
Yeah, agree.
of
I
the
think that
bubble.
for me, like that beingness is, what I call like the sort of invisible side of unschooling. You can't really quantify it in a way that you can quantify all this other stuff like school wounds, the research about like reading later and how that impacts your reading experience, things like the outcomes for unschoolers, things like depression in school. 65% of 12-year-olds are anxious because of school. There's all this like really quite compelling hard data about unschooling, that makes it really, I think, like feel a bit more doable, quite accessible. But the really juicy stuff, I think, is the invisible stuff and the stuff that's quite hard to describe, and there's absolutely no evidence for apart from in our stories. And that is one of them, is the ability to be without being harassed into productivity or consumption or proving of oneself, the gathering of skills, the gathering of learning. I'm a massive intense learner. I basically like get happy by learning. If I'm like a bit sad, I'll like do a course.
Great.
And I'll be happy. It's so weird. And I like do love that about me. It means that I've got a lot of interest and I kind of have a tiny, tiny scrap of a handle on quite a bunch of stuff.
I love that.
But I don't really know a lot
The
of stuff.
hyper focus.
It's kind of like a cool attribute, but I also do feel like it is also a wound. Like quite a lot of the stuff that makes me like super dynamic and like hungry and like excitable, it also is actually a bit of a wound from very early on being forced into learning this and learning that and getting on the ladder of skills. And if you remember like just something so simple as being in kindergarten and being told how to use a knife and fork, you know.
Wow.
And my mum was telling someone how, oh, Lucy can use a knife and fork properly now. And me being like, oh, I can use a knife and fork properly now. That's nothing. Have you taught your kids how to use a knife and fork?
My kids eat with their hands.
Yes, same, actually.
It's like it's great and I love it, but it's also I find it really triggering though, because I grew up in a way where not even my family so much. My parents are great. They wouldn't have forced that upon me, but just culturally, like everybody ate with a knife and fork. And when my kids are, my 8-year-old especially, I'm just like, I find it so hard not to tell him to use his fork sometimes, because that's my wounding. I wouldn't know
I
where it
hear
comes
you.
from.
Well, I mean, I think that it is probably pushing the buttons around you whether your kids will be acceptable to society,
That's it, right?
And that is a really big one that can kind of rear its head. Like, are we creating humans that are unfit for civilization?
It's funny because when was it? Last year? Can't remember. Last January, we were in India and everybody eats with their hands in India. And my son was like, "Look, Mom, everybody's eating with their hands. Everybody, it's fine." People that all of
I love
all
that.
demographics and all walks of life and fancy restaurants and like street food, it's everyone was eating with their hands. And
That's so
it,
cool.
yeah, it was like had that lived
Well,
experience of feeling seen in his eating with his hands. And I was like, you're right. Like I was so humbled in that moment. And
well, that's so amazing. I'll just like do one more bit of normalizing for you because my kids actually like to eat with their hands. I mean, they're very proficient with a knife and fork too, but if they had it all their way, they'd just use their hands all of the time. But recently, they have started doing hands-free meals too,
with
where
their
they just eat with their faces. And
That's so funny.
actually that is their favorite way to eat.
Great.
But I really celebrate all of the animalistic behaviors. This is another like invisible thing that I cannot quantify. It's just my deep instinct is that like the route to feeling at peace with ourselves, quite possibly the route to harmony on this planet is actually us becoming more in touch with our animal nature,
Totally.
spending more time out of our analytical brains and our heads and like all of the thoughts and just coming back into just pure presence and that pure presence of an animal. So whenever my kids are acting animalistic, I'm like, yeah. And I think that a huge amount of like the problems that we have in the world, our interpersonal problems, our inability to feel satisfied with ourselves and our life, really do stem from pushing kids way too early out of their bodies and their animalistic tendencies and into their heads. And I would, say that we should delay any pushing of any kind into any head stuff for as long as possible.
Until they communicate that they might want to experience concepts outside of their body. I think that that is so powerful. And doesn't feel radical at all to me. But if you step outside of the bubble into that world, it's just, it's like I can see people like malfunction sometimes when they think about that, because it's because they're so disconnected from that animalistic part of themselves and just that beingness with life.
Yeah.
And it's, we're just really doing a disservice to humanity by pushing little children, like kids. I was went past the school recently. Our school term went back a couple of months ago, and I saw some little kids starting kindergarten for the first time. And I was really taken by how little they were. I was like, they're so little. Like, if my middle daughter was going to school, she would have been starting, she'll be starting school next year, I guess. Maybe. I don't even, not sure what the age is, 5 or 6, very soon. And she's so little. Like, it's sad. Like, I'm like, oh, they need to be playing. They need to be together with like other little people and be with us and be with their parents. And I actually, like, I feel it in my body, like this sadness that these little people are going into that place because I know what's going to happen.
Yeah. But it's just so normalized, isn't it? I know my daughter Juno went to like a forest school last year for one day a week, and it was with a bunch of her friends, and we know the guy that runs it really well. We've known him for years. He's the most beautiful guy. And for the whole first term, she needed me or Tim with her. And so she's 10 now, but she was 9 at that stage. And that's just her personality. She's always wanted us close by, and she loved this place, but she just really, really, really wanted us to be with her. And I thought, oh, this is something to keep secret, because people would think, oh, you've created this like dependency on you. But the main thing I just feel is that we have got it so, so wrong what is normal for kids to do. And actually, I believe for tons of kids wanting to do cool, adventurous things, but with their main attachment person with them, even when they're 9, is actually way more normal.
Absolutely.
And now she goes off. She does tons of things now. So it definitely did kick in for her, but it kicked in for her when she was 10, not when she was 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or even 7. You know, she just is the type of person that needed somebody to be close with her. And I believe there's so many of those kids, and they're not getting anything like those needs met.
Yeah.
But I think the really, really big, deep work does need to be done. And I think that this is the full surrender / terrifying bit of unschooling. I feel like there's like the first couple of layers of unschooling, which is like all of that data stuff. It's like, oh, no. Kids will learn to read. All of the data says, look, da-da-da. And they will in their own time, all their evidence, see? And it's like, yeah, they will be a success. Like they'll, because all of the outcomes, look, it's so good. I'm doing unschooling, but really I'm still going to create normal people.
Yeah, totally.
And then I think actually the more you do it, you realize that there's like this whole other, maybe like iceberg, which is about really undoing like full myths of civilization, which is like the question, would it actually be really amazing if we had a generation of kids who didn't actually learn to read until they were 16? Because then they might get 16 years in their body in full presence without being forced into their head and forced to do stuff. And you know what? That might create like some kind of superhuman who has quite a lot of shamanic capacity to really step in many of the gaps that we have created, many of the holes that we have dug for ourselves. So for me, it's like actually goes really, really deep. I mean, there's no pressure. I'm not saying, Ramona and Juno, I'm actually doing this so that you can be a shaman. and fill in the gaps for, like, you know, our broken world. I'm not doing it for that, but I just feel like there are these, like, really massive questions, like these meta things that we're doing and that we're, like, sort of experimenting with. And I think that it's really important to hang in with unschooling until you get to that place and you ask the question, what if my child doesn't learn to read? Will it actually be a big problem?
And creating space for them to be able to explore themselves and their body and their beingness for as long as they need to before or if they decide to go into the realms of moving into the head. That feels so right. When you were just saying that, that felt so right in my body. But I know that out there in that big world outside of unschooling, that's just such a radical concept. But it's also really not, you know, it's where our ancestors learnt through singing and dancing and painting, and they weren't learning through books. The history was the stories were told around the fire, you know, they were told in the astrals. They were connected to their dreams, you know, as downloaded their dreams. So yeah, let's open the space for them to experience being shamanic, you know. It's the possibilities are literally limitless, and it's doing a
You
disservice
are
to them.
speaking my language. Oh my God. I think for so many years, I was very much sort of in the first few years, the first few layers, and, you know, convincing myself and people of, like, you know, yep, you can get on a track to being normal. Even if you're unschooling, you know, it's all good. It's just like a little bit of liberation, and then your kid will be out in the world being a success. And now I'm much more like in the vibe of, like, I feel like I am raising my kids according to, like, pre-patriarchal rule. I'm, like, trying to raise my kids in the energy of the great cosmic mother, where they are able to be present and eschew all of the things that normal society would have them do in order to be deeply connected with themselves and the present moment and, yeah, one day the divine.
Yeah, so powerful. It's such a powerful reclamation to make as a parent. So normal for your children, because that's just their life. But as a parent, you know, I think that that's a really powerful and brave thing to claim. And yeah, I feel for myself that what I'm doing by claiming this as well for my children is, I mean, I'm claiming it for them, but I'm claiming it for the future. I'm claiming it for their children, my grandchildren, and all the people that came before us as well. Because we have, you know, in my opinion, really been led astray from our connection to our magic, our connection to the mystery, our connection to the deep unknown. And it's actually, you know, hasn't been that long since we've been led away from those things. And I feel like we can come back to those as quickly, if not quicker. Let's go there, because whatever is happening isn't working.
I'm with you. I think that it's possible. I think that we're in a super accelerated kind of evolution that is bringing back the sort of old ways and kind of combining it with some contemporary insights and understandings about how to be. Very exciting time to
I
be
was
alive.
about to say, it's so exciting. My 8-year-old just yesterday as well, we had some really great conversations yesterday, but he was feeling a little bit sad because some of his best friends are currently traveling overseas, and he's similar to what you were saying about Ramona. He's kind of missing having some of his really close buddies here at the moment, and you know, they'll come back maybe. I'm not sure what they're going to do. And he said the hardest thing for him at the moment is connecting with other children around his age that don't play video games, that immerse in their imagination. And he's like, I don't have those people around right now. And I was like, yeah, that's big, because it's hard. There's a lot of people out there that are immersed in those realms of distraction and video games and whatever the things are. And I can see that a lot of children entering that preteen phase and adolescence are, their imagination kind of we give away a little bit, and he's
Well, I
really
think if you
yearning
are in
for
school being forced to do all of the things that you don't really want to do, and then you come home and then you're gaming, it leaves no windows in your life for that being and that imagination. My kids, we're pretty like positive about screens, and my kids have really enjoyed gaming, and it's one of the ways that they stay connected with all of their friends around the world from all of the world schooling adventures that we've done, which is
Amazing.
really cool. But yeah, my 13-year-old really still plays imagination games, which
Amazing.
I find shocking. I probably stopped that when I was honestly like nine, I reckon about nine I stopped. And I'd say that is from like observation and chat. When I mention this kind of thing on my Instagram, yeah, people tend to say like it's 9 or 10 for school kids. Whereas, yeah, I know for a fact that the 13-year-olds in our community who are outside of school are still totally able to drop into
That's
like
so great.
playing with their cuddly teddies and
I
stuff.
love that.
I
That's so
know.
great. And do you think that's because they just have this spaciousness in their life to be able to drop in and out of those different realms of their
I think
being?
the spaciousness and the not being forced in. You know, I have never ever spent time trying to convince my kids to read or write or do anything that involves their kind of cognitive brain, actually. I've never done that. And so I think I would say basically get constantly asking kids to come out of their bodies and presence into the rational part. Basically trains your brain for rational thinking and not imaginative, creative thinking.
Yeah, which is like really the core of where our pure, authentic expression comes from in all that we do, even when we choose to decide, when they choose to decide to read and write and do those things, if we don't protect that connection to their creativity and their creative expression, then what's the point? What's the point? We're just like fracturing their essence, I guess, in a way. Yeah. Have your children come to reading and writing? Are they interested in doing that?
Yeah, they're both really different, and one of them is into it really naturally. She is, I call her like my Steiner child, because if we did do Steiner, she would have fitted right in. She's just, you know, since very tiny person wanted to just do beautiful watercolors, and you know, she can do really detailed work from really young age, and so she is really into it naturally, and is over the last like year quite interested in making her writing improve and, you know, working on that. And then our oldest is not really very interested at all. She is also like me, super neurodivergent, and, you know, just has other priorities. Now she's making reading and writing a priority because it's becoming essential for her ability to communicate. So there's just been a real natural trigger for her to get interested in it in order for her to connect with her friends. It's like seems really in the right order for that to kick in for her. And yeah, one of them has come to reading through like my older. She's needed a little bit more support. She's identified that she wants to do it, and it's been like coming up with a plan so we can sit down and do it together, because she's needed a lot more hand holding. And then, and you know, it's been wild to observe the difference about around how they've come to it. So like my eldest, she would traditionally probably have dyslexia, in that phonics mean absolutely nothing. Nothing to her, and they never have. So like I can remember, and it's the same now, and back then it would be like k a t. It's like a c and an a and a t, and they sound like k a t, and when you put them together it's like k a t cat. See how that spells cat? And so we'd do that, and then she'd come to the word cat and she'd be like and I'd be like, okay, she's trying to work out the phonics, she's trying to work it out, and she'll be like, monkey dippledy-doo. And, you know, she just come up with the most absolute, and like it's literally like her brain just didn't work that way. Whereas Juno, our youngest, her brain totally works with phonics. She can understand it. So yeah, our oldest has needed a bit more of support around it, and our youngest has been a completely mysterious way. She can just read anything, and I don't know how she really learned. It just happened. And yeah, so it's been actually an incredible experience, like watching both of their brains so differently, coming to reading in like really, really unique ways. And it's just really highlights like the ridiculousness of getting like 25 kids in one room doing phonics. And you know, they reckon 20% of kids phonics don't work for them. So you've got 20% of kids sitting in a class
glazing
phonics
over.
Going, what the fuck? Like, literally, what? See, that makes cat? What? And feeling completely stupid.
Yeah.
And completely broken and unfixable. 20% of kids, it's enormous.
I actually got shamed in kindergarten. I have this school trauma from kindergarten. It's still so alive in my body. We had to bring something into the class that started with N. Mm-hmm. And I brought a garden gnome in. Yeah. I had no idea it had a silent G. Like,
G, what the hell?
I've known that. I was five. And I was so stoked because I thought I was being really cool with this garden gnome, because gnomes are, I love gnomes and fairies and things like that. And my teacher, Mrs. McDonald, like, she's like, well, no, actually, Amy, gnome starts with a G. It has a silent G. And I just remember this like wave, probably the first time ever, of shame washed over me, and I felt stupid. And since then, I just thought that, oh, well, maybe reading and writing isn't my thing. Like, I'm not good at it. I can't express myself in that way. And that's something that I've carried with me my whole entire life and still unraveling from that. And like, she could have, that could have been such a different experience, you know, had she not projected that onto my little being. And so, yeah, just, and so unnecessary. Like, I was basically a toddler.
I know. You just like, from this viewpoint, hey, like this standpoint, you're just like, what in the heck?
Like, it's
like,
a
for
nothing.
One, what's with silent G's? I mean, hello, that is ridiculous. And yeah, then two, it's like, you're so tiny. Like, what the heck? You could have just been held lovingly, and it could have just been like this really light experience.
Yeah.
And instead you felt shame. I'm really sorry that happened to
I know it sucks, but that's okay. I definitely use it as fuel now to expand into other areas with my children and my unschooling journey. So it's actually medicine in a lot of ways. I used to work as an artist in residence in schools in Western Sydney, and I worked a lot with kids who were refugees from all over the world. And so English was often their third, fourth, fifth language. And we didn't necessarily do much reading. It was more art-based, but sometimes we would just, you know, explore words and explore different concepts in books. And I had this one beautiful student. He was from Lebanon, I'm pretty sure, and his English was minimal, and he was really obsessed with circles. And we opened this book, and he started doing like these beautiful drawings in this book with all of the letter, like letter O. And whenever that popped up in the book, he would draw a line between each O and created these incredible artworks. And I don't really know what he was processing through that, or he was just being with this book. But it was really a really beautiful experience to watch him and just see him express himself using letters in a classroom and just feeling free to do that. And yeah, I don't know the relevance of why I'm bringing that up, but it was, it was a real moment for me to just see beyond words, I guess, and see that he was interpreting a meaning of having that book open in front of him beyond reading and beyond the words, and just creating his own relationship with that experience.
Totally. I love that. It's so beautiful. And John Holt would say that that is the doorway. Like, people come to like their learning moments via play. And so, yeah, you need to let go of the doorways to things and have things around, but allow for a child to pick something up and do what whatever they want with that thing before any sort of traditional learning might come from that.
Or expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beautiful. We're almost at the end of our chat. I could chat for hours about all of these things. But I did have a couple of a question, a main question that a couple of people had for you. And that was, any tips for people who are just starting out? Because there's a lot of people, I feel like unschooling is kind of exploding at the moment. A lot of people, like the silver lining of COVID for a lot of people, at least over here in Australia and probably everywhere, just really showed people how dysfunctional the school system was. But they didn't really have the tools or the capacity to be able to hold their children or really lean into unschooling. And I feel more and more families are wanting to do this, but they don't really know how. Do you have any tips?
Yeah, I would say that the starting point is less with your kids and less about unschooling and more about being with yourself and your nervous system and your ability to chill the fuck out. And I would say if there's like, if I could design like the perfect journey for someone, they would really start with a foundation of learning how to just relax and enjoy themselves, no matter like what is going on. So like develop a practice of really great breathing, a little tiny morning practice where you sort of set your vision for the day, maybe some rituals, nothing like really dramatic, but just like small things that are about you, like really nurturing yourself so that you have this foundation of chilling the fuck out. Because basically that is the difference between having a really hard time with unschooling or having an amazing, fun, hilarious, intriguing, challenging, and exciting adventure.
Yeah, great. That's the best advice.
So I reckon just like basically learn how to chill the fuck out and then come at unschooling. Usually you're doing both things at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I reckon those practices of just like being so down with yourself and your body and being really present and being able to hold all of your emotions as they come and not being like beaten up by them. It's just like so is a difference between night and day.
Absolutely.
But yeah, maybe you start there.
Great. That's such great advice. We are such multidimensional beings. We have the capacity to be with it all.
And it's such an art. I think it's the art of this era in humankind is basically holding everything. And you know, even when we freak out, not freak out beyond capacity.
Yeah.
Even being able to like hold our freaking outness
totally
alongside the, you know, the gentle whatever, you know, like just this, I just have this sense that being able to hold it all and like move through life, like holding all of our experiences and all of our emotions is basically the job of our species right now.
And without judgment as well. It's okay to feel like shit and feel great at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's been a big one for us. And I think that's coming home to that is actually like such a big journey for a lot of people because we are so conditioned to believe that everything needs to be so fucking linear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One way or the other. It's like, oh, yeah. I'm feeling like shit. You know, but yes, there's something about going, oh, yeah, I feel a little crazed. And also, I'm kind of happy.
Yeah, totally. Liberating. Honestly, it's liberating. Yeah, I feel like I journey through that very, very like often, maybe multiple times a week. I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh, today feels hard. Let's go on an adventure, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much, Lucy, for joining me. It's been amazing, so insightful, and just really beautiful. I'm sure everybody who listens to this is just going to receive everything that you've expressed with open arms.
I've loved this conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
That was such a beautiful conversation. I hope you were all as inspired by that as I was. I love speaking to visionaries like Lucy. If you would like to check out some of her mentorship programs and courses, you can head to her website, www.discolearning.com, or you can check her out on Instagram, Lucy_disco. You've been listening to the School Free Life podcast, where I take you on a journey through all the realms of what it means to live a school-free life. Please subscribe to the School Free Life on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and all other regular streaming platforms to stay up to date with latest episodes. Thanks for listening, and I can't wait to journey with you again soon.